Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The following is a special presentation of KNX News 97.1 FM.
The Southern California fire disaster. 1 month later.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Exactly 1 month ago, the worlds of several thousand L.A. County residents, they were turned upside down when violent winds stoked massive fires that left a trail of unprecedented destruction. Tonight, we will bring you the survival stories of six people who lost everything during the January 7th fires, three residents of the Pacific Palisades and three residents of Altadena. We will ask about processing and overcoming the trauma, about their dealings with insurance companies and the government, and ask about the next stages of recovering and rebuilding. The only voices you will hear tonight, aside from Margaret and myself, are from the survivors. No politicians, no officials, no analysts, just the people who lost it all, but have come out the other end, still standing and still fighting.
Let us introduce our first panel. Aldra Allison lived in her Altadena home since 1997, where she raised her two children. She works in affordable housing development for various SoCal cities, most recently the city of Pasadena. Alexandra Von Tiergarten lived in Pacific Palisades since 2006. She is the parent of two teenagers who were born and raised in their Palisades home. She is a district president for an LA-based consulting firm. And Chad Lowe, an actor, director, and producer. He tells us he has lived in the Pacific Palisades in three different stretches of his life. He moved into his home in 2014, where he raised his three daughters.
And we'll also mention that we have in the studio with all of us a lot of family and friends, mm-hmm. I presume, of the people that we are talking to. So welcome to you all. Aldra, I want to start with you because I'm looking at a photo. Actually, it's three photos. And one shows what your house looked like before the fires. The other shows what is left, which is really nothing, of your house after the fires. But the third picture is the one that I find the most interesting in many ways. And it shows the view, I guess, from your home with flames nearby. Was that the first time you found out that there was this devastating fire that's about to consume your home?
Yes. My friend, Lupe Perez, I'm be perfectly honest, basically saved my life because she called me and said there's a fire at the top of Lake Street. And we've kind of been watching the fire. The Eden Canyon fire is about 4 miles away. So when she called and I went outside to my driveway, that's what I saw. And it was like, oh, this is not Eden Canyon. This is close by. The evacuation zone was east of Lake Street. I live about two blocks west of Lake Street. So immediately I just ran inside, told my husband and son, we have to go. We have to go now. It was about maybe 9:30. And basically, you know, we live near the foothills. So we had luggage inside the hallway closet, three bags. So everybody take a bag, fill it up, let's go. Only thing I could take was the items in my bedroom. We had three cars. That was an issue because my husband, to be honest, he's blind in one eye, has glaucoma. He doesn't drive at night, but he wanted to leave his car. And it's like, no, we can't leave the car. You have to follow me out. And he followed me out, you know, through the smog. I mean, it was not smog, but smoke and wind blowing. And I had my flashers on, and I was worried about trees falling because branches was flying everywhere. And we made it down Fair Oaks to Pasadena to his sister's house. And unfortunately, we probably got there at 10 o'clock. Then 5:30 in the morning, we had to evacuate from his sister's house in Pasadena. Hmm. And then we went, believe it or not, we just went to a Trader Joe's parking lot in South Pasadena. They had an RV, and we just kind of hung out a few hours, you know, down there. And then eventually we made our way to my sister's house. She lives in Rancho Cucamonga, and we stayed with her for the first week.
What an ordeal, and I'm sorry you went through that.
Alexandra, where were you when the Palisades fire started?
I was actually in Pasadena. I was at a meeting on Colorado with a colleague who also lost his home in the Eaton fire. Mm-hmm. And I got a text message from a wonderful group of moms from my son's school at St. Matthew's saying there's a fire in the Palisades. But by the way, it's the same, you know, area where we had had a fire on New Year's Eve. So I didn't think anything of it. I went back to my meeting, and then I started getting messages from St. Matthew's, from his school. Like, the kids are okay, we're watching the fire. And then a half an hour later, you need to come right now and get your kids. And
oh my gosh.
I started to panic because I was in Pasadena, which is, as we know in Los Angeles, a long ways from the Palisades to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just said, I got to go right now. And I got in the car and I was driving like 85, 90 miles an hour to get back. And by the time I got there, I couldn't even get into the school. So you couldn't access Bienvenida. And luckily, another mom from his class had picked him up, but she couldn't turn left to come towards my house. She had to turn right. So he was stuck on Sunset in the chaos, you know, that ensued. And I was contacting this mom and saying, like, well, and she goes, well, I'm going to get to you, but we're not moving. We're not moving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of my children, luckily, was at school in Encino, and so I knew she was safe, my daughter. But, like, not knowing that my son was okay, I couldn't properly process that I needed to pack. I couldn't properly process what I needed to grab that would be important if our house burned down.
Did you grab anything?
Very little. So I ended up walking to him to get him about a mile in the smoke. I grabbed an old mask that I had from COVID, you know, that wasn't proper for that time. I got him, and then we walked back, and then we just grabbed just, you know, a couple outfits, just something simple, and then we had to go.
Chad, you've lived, three different times in your life in Pacific Palisades. Needless to say, this last time, I'm sure it didn't end in any way, shape, or form the way you would have envisioned it. Tell us what happened.
First of all, thank you guys so much for doing this and bringing us all together. I think it's really important to hear these voices from people from both from Altadena and from the Palisades as well, because we're sharing in this together. I think I've three different times moved back to the Palisades because I finally realized that was really where I felt most at home in that community. And that morning, I got an alert, like many of us do, from the Fire Watch. I forget what that app is called, but I got an alert that there was a brush fire and it was close to where we live. So I went up and looked and had a view of it, and I could see that it was blowing north and west. Which was not in line of where we were at all. It would need to have changed directions to go more southerly and somewhat easterly to get to our neighborhood. And our neighborhood is at the end, is if you know the Palisades at all, there's the Gelson's Market and kind of the center. If you go down the bluffs on Via de la Paz towards the ocean, we were in that community. So I recognized that a friend of mine was in kind of imminent danger who lived up on Lockman Lane. And I let my wife know that she needed to go get her mother, who is in a condo right in the path of the fire. And never once did I imagine that we were in danger from this. And I've been through a lot of the fires living in Malibu in the, you know, in the late 70s and 80s and in the 90s. I've been through a lot of these fires. So I considered myself kind of an expert, and I told my wife that we would be okay and just be prepared, but I thought we would be fine. So I helped my friend evacuate, and his house was probably one of the first to go. And then by the time I was done with that, my wife said, look, you've got to go pick our child up at the middle school, And I'm going to get the other two. Our oldest is in high school at Pali High, and so she was off for winter break still. So she was home. But I never made it back home because of the gridlock that we were all talking about. And I was able to pick up my middle child, and that was an ordeal unto itself, which I won't go into detail with. But it was clearly, I don't think anybody was really prepared for the magnitude of this.
Alexandra, how are you living now?
So we've relocated to Thousand Oaks, and that's really because of taking a look at that this is a catastrophe. You know, I'm lucky to be insured, but none of us are insured for this catastrophe. So I took a look at the relocation, and I divided it by 36 months, and I knew I couldn't afford to live in the place that I've lived for 18 years. I couldn't afford the west side of L.A., you know. So we're now in the car 4 to 5 hours a day just to get to school and for me to get to work. And that's, you know, a big strain and a big change for us.
Aldra, how about you?
We've since relocated to Monrovia, California, which is kind of unique because when we first got married 33 years ago, we actually lived 1 year in Monrovia, and now we're back in Monrovia.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I have a question for you, too, because I understand that you're a part of First AME Church in Pasadena, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And 54 families just in that congregation alone lost their homes in the fire.
Yes. I attend First AME Church. 54 members of our church lost their home. Unfortunately, I'm in my late 70s, so the vast majority of these people are older than me.
Oh, wow.
I also work for the city of Pasadena. 30 people with the city of Pasadena lost their home. My neighbor, she works at JPL, and 200 people at JPL lost their home.
Chad, how are you living now?
We had a very dear friend of my wife's who offered a guest house in Coldwater Canyon that we just immediately went to. I think we all thought we would be overnight there or maybe two nights there and back. So that's why we didn't grab much. In fact, my wife was very generous to me because she grabbed me a pair of underwear and socks in lieu of my passport and my computer. But we've been there and we're trying to figure out how long we'll stay. And we need to obviously help pay for this guest house. We can't just freeload completely. So we're there for now, and I think going to be moving in April to another temporary home.
Do you all have kids or right now? Everyone's shaking their head yes.
Yeah. Mine's are grown.
Are grown.
Yeah.
And yours?
Alexandra has
her kids
children here.
Hi, kids. how are they taking it? Because it, as upsetting as it must be for you, it's got to be, I would imagine, magnified for children.
It's the only house that they've, you know, considered home, right? And I think it's, you know, their bedrooms were still decorated as they were decorated when they came home from the hospital. It's devastating. I think it's just really, really hard to cope, you know.
And William, right? Your son, his school burned too, right?
Yeah, St. Matthew's partially burned. I think they were lucky to have burned less than some of the other schools. But yeah, his school's relocated, as all the schools, you know, kind of have to Santa Monica.
That has to be difficult. I'm sorry,
no,
Charles.
No, go ahead.
Has to be difficult. And for you as well, Chad, just to have the whole routine just upended in an instant.
Yeah, I think my wife and I made in the panic of the moment and the next morning realizing that not only was our home gone, but our entire neighborhood was gone. There was, you know, a lot of grief and all of the emotions that come with grief. And there was this sense that we had of, OK, what do we do next? What's next? What's next? And we both agreed that we would try to keep our children's well-being at the forefront of any decision we made. And there were decisions of, you know, based on economics, where do we go? Where do we move? Do we leave the state? Do we leave the city? Other friends were trying to make the same decisions. But we just figured we're going to, these kids just lost their home. And we just didn't think it would be right for us to then say, oh, sorry about the house, and you're moving to a new school, and you're going to have to try to make new friends.
Chad, are your kids processing this differently?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, I think I just saw my 15-year-old today said something to me that she said that she was realizing how fortunate she was to live in a community where she could walk places. And I think look, many of us hopefully will rebuild, and that's a whole other conversation about how that will happen.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah.
we'll get to that.
But something was lost that day.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously people lost their lives, and to me that's the greatest tragedy of all of this, is the people that actually lost their lives. But we also lost a community, both in Altadena and in the Palisades. And to me, that feels like a death in a way, because there was something about our neighborhood, there was something about our community that's gone. And that's really hard to kind of come to terms with.
Gone, and everybody's kind of just scattered at this point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that you would like to get back, I would imagine, with the rebuilding. But do you think it'll ever be that way again?
I think some people just won't come back, right?
Yeah.
I think we have to inevitably know that. And then also, you know, I have teenage children. So now if it takes 3 years to rebuild, they're getting close to, one of them will be in college, one of them will be getting close to college. So we've lost these crucial years of being able to walk to your friends' homes, being able to walk to the village, and all these things that we cherished about the neighborhood. You know, that will change, and some families will choose that they can't rebuild, you know, or they don't want to. You know, maybe they're scared to live in the same area again.
For those who may just be joining us, you're listening to a very special broadcast we're doing. It is a month now since the fires began, and we are talking in the first half hour with three people, and in the second half hour with three other people, people whose lives were just turned upside down and inside out, and we have a lot more to talk to them about.
And you are listening to a very special 1 hour here on KNX News 97.1 FM. We are speaking with people who lost their homes in both the Palisades and Eaton fires exactly 1 month ago today. I want to go back to Aldra. Have you been able to go back to your property and perhaps salvage anything from it?
Yeah, I've been back. The first 2 weeks, no one could enter the area at all.
Yeah.
But I have been back about three times, and there's nothing to salvage.
Did you have any difficulties getting back to your property? Because that was, maybe still is, an issue in the Palisades, right, Chad? You're shaking your head yes, and you're shaking your head yes as well, Alexandra. Was there a similar issue with your place in Altadena?
Yes. In fact, the first 2 weeks, it was very emotional because I wanted to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Guard was there, and they wouldn't let anyone in. So every day, I went back trying to get back. I mean, I was willing to walk in, and they wouldn't let me in. I just had to see it myself. And once I did, you know, we looked around, and there was nothing, because in actuality, unfortunately, like the Palisades fire, the fire department wasn't able to really assist.
Mm-hmm.
My neighborhood just burned. There was no water, there was no fire trucks, there was nothing. So there was nothing left.
Are you angry? You must be. I would be if I were you.
I think my anger is going down. I'm disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much misinformation. Well, if we have the water from Northern California, no, that wasn't going to make a difference. I live in the unincorporated area, Altadena. We have four different water companies. Our water comes from the Colorado River. So it hurts when I see and read about misinformation. I mean, this fire was unique because the winds were unique. Normally we have a fire, we hear the helicopters, we hear the water dropping airplanes. They couldn't fight this fire.
Mm-hmm.
The fire department was spread too thin, from the Palisades, the Hollywood Hills, to Altadena. You know, it was just once in a lifetime type of situation. So my neighborhood looked like Hiroshima. It looked like a bomb went off.
Chad, you're shaking your head very aggressively to everything that she is saying. You're in a different community. She's in Altadena. You're in the Palisades, but a similar experience.
Yeah, I think about being angry, you know, obviously there's all those levels, the five different stages of grief that you go through, and anger is certainly one of them. And I am starting to feel some anger, and I'm trying not to act on that anger or give in to that anger, because I think there's still a lot that needs to be determined before we start pointing fingers and start placing blame. And I have my theories and I have my ideas, but I really want to just hold back on that. And because I also know nothing good will come from my anger. We need to learn from this, and so that this never happens again, hopefully. But I do think We need to just pause on a lot of the kind of judgment that's coming out, pause on some of the questions about what rebuilding will look like and what it won't look like, and allow us time to heal, to grieve, come to terms with this, acknowledge this, but also find out what were the causes, how could we have prevented this? And I'm of the mind that we could have prevented it.
By more resources?
I knew you'd ask that question. I know how you get right to the heart of the matter there. I'm going to try to not be political. I just think that, as you mentioned, we all knew that these winds were coming. We all knew these were Hurricane 1 force winds that were coming.
Yep.
Pre-deployment should have been a top priority. I don't know why it wasn't, but it wasn't. The reservoir in the Palisades had been dry for a while. So there are a lot of questions about what we're doing with our infrastructure that are bigger questions. And so I don't want to entertain those through a lens of my anger about what has happened. If anything, I'm just sad. I'm just really sad. I'm sad for all the people in this room. I'm sad for my friends, my neighbors, my community, Altadena. And, you know, so that needs to be acknowledged, too. It's just a sadness that I think I feel more than anything.
Alexandra, you've been kind of also shaking your head, kind of.
I think we just feel stunned.
Yeah.
You know, again, back to whatever reason caused this, our entire community should not have been destroyed. These winds, yes, probably some of the houses would have been destroyed, but the entire community, everyone we know, all the schools, all the businesses, I think that's the part that's so hard to cope with. You know, and even when we go back and we touch the ground on where we lived, and we have to cry for everyone else. And I drive around the neighborhood to go see my friends' homes, who I already know burned down, but I just want to see it, you know? And then, you know, you do get angry, and then you just try to come back and say, okay, what can we do to move forward? How can we move forward?
Aldra, do you have any concerns that Altadena, in an attempt to have a resurrection of it, might have a different fate than the Palisades, because the Palisades, to be quite frank, was a richer community for the most part.
No doubt about it. Plus, the Altadena community is older. So when you factor that in, you know, many of the people are just basically saying, we're too old to rebuild. My husband and I even had that conversation. You know, we could easily move somewhere else. But I had a conversation with my son, and he, you know, we basically had a family discussion and saying, well, I was hoping that you would rebuild, that someday I would inherit the house, and that someday I would pass that house on to my granddaughter, Olivia. So for us, it's just not a home, it's generational wealth.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who are, and my background is housing, a lot of people really won't have the means or the ability to get a new mortgage or to refinance the rebuilding of it and also maintain for 3 years to do that. My family lost a house. My brother-in-law lost a house. My brother-in-law is 83 years old.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
And his daughter lives in Arizona. So does he move to Arizona and just forget about it, or does he try to rebuild at 83? So, you know, there's. I think we're an older community, and, you know, we just don't have a lot of the resources or architects and cleanup. And, you know, people are still in the convention center in Pasadena because they don't have money to go to a hotel.
See, they're still living there now.
People,
a month
there are
later.
Like 300 people still in the convention center.
Where do things stand for you as far as insurance is concerned and for your future moving forward?
You know, I'm very blessed that my husband and I, we're both professional people. My husband grew up in Pasadena. He's a PHS class of 72 grad. He's also a Berkeley grad. I'm a college grad also. So we both have professional careers and professional retirements. So we're okay. All right, but because people know that I work in housing, people approach me all the time to say, hey, I'm retired and my Social Security is only $1,500 a month. And how can I can't afford to find a place to rent, less known, think about rebuilding. And that's real, you know, and Altadena is still a very expensive place Yeah. You know, I was talking to Alexandria earlier, and she said her neighborhood was renting for $17,000 a month. I couldn't even imagine that.
Wow.
Because people in my neighborhood struggle trying to do $3,000 a month. So, you know, it's all relative. And $3,000 to somebody in another state, Kansas, is like, wow, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's all relative in terms of where we're at. But I know from working in housing that the average person's over 80 Social Security is probably only $1,500 a month.
How many of you, of the three of you, had insurance? All three of you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I know we've heard a lot of people in the past month who have questioned whether insurance is going to, quote, make them whole, end quote. Chad, is insurance going to make you whole?
I think that's part of, first of all, I just say, yes, I have insurance, and I feel really blessed and lucky that we do, because we had been dropped about a year ago by our original insurer, and they said that they dropped us because we were in a, as they said, a quote-unquote high fire risk neighborhood, and I just thought that that was another excuse just to get out of business in California. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they knew something that we didn't. But yeah, I whether or not I will be made whole or anyone will be made whole, I think is one of the questions that we all have in our minds. Mm-hmm. And I, if I had any appeal to our elected officials, it would be, if you don't know, please say we don't know. Because I'm hearing a lot of mixed messages about 6 months, you'll be able to rebuild. 1 year, you'll be able to rebuild. And I just think that's giving people false hope.
Yeah.
I think it's also, and also practically, you need to make decisions financially. Mm-hmm. If that is your path to rebuild, you need to understand how to make those financial decisions that are going to lead to that. And I think there's just too much unknown. I mean, what are they going to come back from with any kind of new codes? And I don't think that we should probably be building exactly the same thing that we had. I think there are going to be new standards. And what will the cost of those goods be? And will the labor be available? There's so many unknowns here that I think we it's okay for our elected officials to say, we just don't know yet.
Alexandra?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same thing. You know, I think I'm insured and I'm thankful to be insured, but none of us are insured for a catastrophe. I'm sorry, we're just not. And the numbers that we're hearing that are being thrown around don't relate to my insurance benefits that I just renegotiated with my insurance carrier 4 months ago to make sure that I was properly insured.
Oh, wow.
And I was properly insured for normal circumstances. And these are not normal. And I would, you know, also say that there's, you know, I bought my house in 2006. There are working class people in the Palisades, and I'm one of them. And, you know, I can't afford $17,000 a month for a rent payment because that's not what my mortgage was, right? And that's not what my insurance was predicated on. And so just because our houses would rent for that today doesn't mean that, you know, we can afford that, right?
And Aldra, what about you?
I'm fine insurance-wise. My future question is, well, once we rebuild, would there be insurance for us in the future?
Afterwards.
After the fact.
Yeah.
Aldra, Alexandra, Chad, thank you so much. We are going to take a break, and we're going to switch gears here to our next set of folks coming up in just a few minutes here on KNX News.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Southern California Fire Disaster. 1 month later.
On KNX News, 97.1 FM.
Once again, here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
1 month on from the January 7th fires that devastated large parts of Los Angeles County, we continue now to hear from the people who lost everything but are still standing, still fighting, and working out what comes next. The voices you are hearing tonight are from residents of Altadena and the Pacific Palisades. What you will not hear tonight any politicians, any officials, or any analysts. We are focusing tonight on the survivors.
And we are going to bring in now our second group of fire survivors. James Cummings lived in the Palisades since 1987. He and his wife had completed a ground-up remodel of their home in 2015. He is an investor, philanthropic advisor, climate activist, husband, father, and grandfather. Zenobia Millett lived in her Altadena home since 1980. She calls her beloved Altadena a beautiful combination of urban, suburban, and rural communities, all rolled into one. She is an entrepreneur, a self-described tech diva, and a small business advisor. Monique Carlo moved into her Altadena home in 2019, but the home had been in her family for decades, first belonging to her grandmother, then her father, and then her. She is a property manager and mom to three kids and her three children, Christian, 15, Alina, 12, Angelina, 12, also here with us tonight.
Let's start off, as we did with our first three guests in the last half hour, with hearing from all of you what happened on that night, that day, the day after that day. Monique, let's start with you. You moved into, as Margaret said, into your home in Altadena. That was back in 2019?
Yes.
And tell us about what happened on the night of the fire.
So at that night, the winds were insanely crazy. We've gone through some heavy, crazy winds before, but nothing like this. This felt like a cyclone. Like, it was insane. And so the winds, we were already like high alert because we had things flying into our yard. I mean, it was crazy. But around 10 o'clock, I ended up getting a message from a dear friend of mine whose husband is a lineman and was on call. And she told me, she said, "Hey, like, girl, I don't know if you know that there's a fire up in the foothills." And I looked online, tried to see, like, what is she talking about, you know? So thank God for her, because I feel like she did save our lives, because I ended up looking outside and it was already in our foothills, like too close for comfort. I mean, just seeing the red sky, it was insane. And immediately I told my kids, "Hey, go pack up, like, now, like immediately, like go pack up 2-3 outfits, whatever you can get. I'm going to go get the important documents. We got to go now." And thank God, I let my neighbor know, or both of my neighbors know, but I let my neighbor know, and we were all like just in and out, like poking our heads outside to just see, because it was hard to distinguish which direction the fire was actually like going, because it was just insane. So anyways, rapidly we got ready, we got our stuff, grabbed our dogs, and we took off, not realizing that it was going to be the last time that we ever saw our home again.
Zenobia, what was your experience?
Mine was interesting because a friend of mine called about 10 minutes before 7 that evening. And they lived across the street from Eaton Park on New York Drive.
Yeah.
And so in the Deaf Creek, and he says, Steve says, this is urgent. There's a fire in Eaton Canyon. Our neighbors across the street said there was a fire. And then he could see the flames going up the hill and across the hill. We're leaving right now. All we can do is get the cat. And so that turned out to be like about 20 minutes before they say that the start of the fire was. Yeah. So they never got a warning. It was just from their neighbors and visually. And so something about this made me feel very different because I, too, have gone through winds, fires. And normally I'm more afraid of the wind because it has dropped branches through my house 3 feet from my face before. <Wow. laughs> So for me, the wind, fire wasn't an issue because it never came over from the canyon over the hill to go south like it did this time. But something told me it was different. And so I decided that I would grab my irreplaceable. So I put 4 boxes of documents that were like deeds to family property,
yeah,
where my ancestors had signed with an X to buy property back in Texas.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so I got all of those into my car. And then you don't think about you're not going back.
Yeah.
So after that, I was a little uncomfortable. The power finally went out at 10 o'clock that night. This was the 7th. And then I'm like, maybe I should leave. Maybe I should stay because the wind is really bad. And I decided that I wouldn't get undressed. I kept my jacket on. And my husband had, who's passed on a long time ago, had this little funky AM/FM radio, battery operated with the flashlight.
Yeah, wow.
Love those.
KNX worked perfectly.
Okay.
On AM, good too, to know. By the way.
Of course.
And so I just turned that on when the power went out. And then I laid down with it on my bed. And then I got the alert on my phone at 3:25 a.m. And it said, there's a wildfire in your area. Leave now. And
were you already smelling the smoke at that point?
Yeah, a little bit,
yeah.
But it wasn't that much. But while I was taking the boxes back and forth, I could see the whole hillside, but it was farther east from me. Mm. And I could see the flames, and because we have a lot of eucalyptus trees. So, you know, clearly those were on fire as well. And so then I just grabbed my purse. I said, oh, let me just grab my toiletries kit because anywhere I'm going to go is night, and I might need to brush my teeth. Yeah. I want to have my own face soap, mascara, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's all I grabbed.
James, so, James, you've been in the Palisades since 1987, right?
Correct.
All right. So tell us what your experience was.
Okay. So I actually got a text from my daughter who lives way up in Northern California off the grid. Her mail delivery person lost his home in the Paradise Fire. So they stay real alert. So that's the first I heard. Then I'm hearing sirens. And went up onto the roof eventually to look. And my wife was in the garden watering, hosing things down. My neighbor was next door in his relatively new home that they had just remodeled, was in the garden. They have 2 small children. And it's like, I'm thinking, the water's going to evaporate. It's not going to help. But I'll do this anyway because it made me feel like I was doing something. I'm also seeing eventually, I'm not sure how much later, off in the distance, super scoopers flying by and flames up in the hillside that are maybe 6 miles away. And I'm not really worried about it. I'm also a recent survivor of a heart attack, having been saved by my wife calling 911 and the Palisades Fire EMTs coming into our house at 1:30 in the morning. Mm. And,
wow.
And here, and so I'm grateful to them and thinking, okay, I need to be calm and not get upset. So in preparing to evacuate, which I'd done once before, it was like, okay, I just grabbed a few things because I was sure we would be back. And then at the point that smoke started coming into our yard, and it was like, we have to go. And then we had to wait because there was a traffic jam on our very little small street.
There was so much of that there.
There was so much of that. It took us 5 minutes to get out of our driveway because the traffic didn't move, and so nobody could let us in.
Were you scared?
No. I was not scared because I wasn't worried about it at the time.
Even with the wind?
I knew the wind was dangerous, but it didn't occur to me to be scared, and I'm not sure why. It was just like, okay, this is what I have to do. I need to stay functional. I need to be calm. I need to be calm for my wife, and to stay healthy. And
how long did it take you to actually get to a safe place?
About 2.5 hours.
Wow.
In fact, at some point, we have a four-wheel drive vehicle, and I'm thinking, okay, I can't get out. I can't go down Temescal Canyon. I'm going to drive to the bluffs and go down the bluffs and see if the four-wheel drive works, because that struck me as a safe exit.
Did it work? I guess
we didn't have to do that.
You didn't have to do it. Okay.
Okay.
Fortunately, there were some people out directing traffic, and we got out. But then... Yeah.
Right. Monique, what is your life like now? How are you getting about your day? What is your day like?
I feel like that's kind of a loaded question, only because one minute I'm fine, you know, and I have to, for the sake of me and my children, I have to continue on. But there's those moments where I am just, like, I feel frozen. I feel like almost frozen in time to even believe that we're already a month in. It's insane. Absolutely insane. Because everything has changed.
What is your life like?
Right now, though, you know, we're living in a home in Pasadena that is super close to our previous home. But everything is different. I mean, we're literally starting with nothing. And it's just, honestly, it's hard to explain, like, because even receiving things from people, like being overwhelmed with, you know, it's a mixture of feelings with gratitude, you know what I mean? Gratitude, but also just feeling so overwhelmed, like having a difficult time, like, you know, responding to text messages, emails, you know, people that genuinely care, receiving even things from people. Being on the receiving end of things right now is so, so bizarre, especially if you're a giver and stuff, you know. But, yeah, I feel like, did I even answer your question?
Well, of course. I mean, it is the nature of what you're going through right now. Everything's been upended. And it's interesting that you said the idea of frozen. It's this unreal reality for all of you right now. Yeah. Zenobia, where are you living? What's going on with you right now?
Well, fortunately for me, caring people, as we all kind of know, there's a lot of caring people. So some childhood friends that I've grown up with that live here in La Cañada, and one of their daughters was in Rancho Palos Verdes Estates. Mm-hmm. And so when they got evacuated, they let me know, because I was hanging out at a high IHOP because that was the only thing open at 4 a.m. So I was just kind of hanging there wondering. The hardest thing is wondering and trying to imagine, is my house on fire? What does that look like? Is it okay? Did it go some, you know, all of that. But anyway, they said, we're expecting you. I got a chance to kind of like have somewhere to stay there.
And are you staying with them still?
I'm staying with now my daughter's best friend at her townhouse that she has in Palos Verdes. In Rancho Palos Verdes. So I'm still down at the South Bay right now, which is fine because that gives me some time to kind of have some space to process, but then also deal with all the fine print of all the paperwork and understanding these different departments and what the process is, what the chain of, you know, what the real chain is for how things will happen. So it's been kind of nice until I get ready to deal with permitting and put the RV on the place and some other stuff.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to a 1-hour special KNX News broadcast about A month after the devastating fires, we have been talking with a number of people from both communities about what happened to them, how their lives have changed, where they go from here. So that leads us to James. What's your life like now?
Fortunately, we have shelter thanks to a dear friend of my wife's who had a place available and had called in the beginning. But one of the things that bothers me that I'm not hearing about and that I've had in conversations with people where our post office is gone, but so we'd need to pick up the mail someplace else. And there, in talking to the people that I've known for years that work in the post office, and what about the people that work in Gelson's and the other markets, and what about the people, whether they are, I hate using this word, whether they're citizens of the United States or not, that have been taking care of the community in the Palisades, that helped build our house, that take care of our garden, that take care of the physicians and attorneys that may be in town but don't live there, and the students and all the kids in the schools, and their schools are gone, and they've had to survive. They've recently had to process and survive COVID and the alienation, and I'm very concerned about that. And what happens to them, and what's happening politically, who's going to rebuild? Who is going to come back into the neighborhood? How safe is it for the working people that are going to be doing that?
The actual people doing the rebuilding.
The actual people that are doing the rebuilding. When I think about what happened at 9/11 and first responders and all that, and how many of those people are no longer alive or are struggling to breathe, what happens 5, 6, 7 years down the road.
Yeah.
To
hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break.
Back to the Southern California fire disaster 1 month later
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
And we are talking and continuing to talk with people whose lives were just devastated by these fires in Altadena, in Pacific Palisades, in Malibu, other places too, by the way, in Southern California. And sometimes maybe we don't mention those as much as we ought to, but they do matter too. Insurance, it was an issue that came up in the last half hour, so it's going to come up again now. How many of the three of you have insurance? Or all three of you?
All three, yes.
Right. Monique, is insurance going to, and I keep using the phrase because that's what everybody keeps saying they want to be told, is insurance going to make me whole, is what they ask. Do you know if it will?
It absolutely will not.
Will not?
Will not. I'm underinsured. This past June, I was dropped by my previous carrier, and I was searching high and low, and until I contacted a broker that told me about the California Fair Plan. And I'm fortunate to at least have coverage, but it is absolutely not enough.
So what are you going to do?
So prior to this, I was actually in the process of doing a remodel or starting the process of a remodel. And so I already, thank God, had allocated some funds, that was going to go dedicated to that. And now with this insurance, we'll be able to move forward with it. But it brings up another issue with, permits and all of that stuff right now. I'm getting some very conflicting information right now that, the fees will be waived. But I just found out that it's only if it's like for like, and I have no intentions on staying, the same. I would like to build my forever home. That was my intention. And that's what I continue to. I'm going to definitely do it. I still got fight in me.
And is the intention to want to stay in Altadena?
Absolutely. Yeah. My grandmother, just thinking about how she worked her entire life for actually the Pasadena post office and for that home. And, I absolutely owe it to my family, to and my children, you know what I mean, to continue forward, you know, with that.
I had one more question because I know about the pine tree. Would you do the same thing? Do you envision doing the same thing, planting something?
In fact, I plan on going to Oregon to go get one.
Oh, wow.
If I could share that.
Yeah.
So growing up, my father, my parents were divorced. And so my father, you know, we would visit him frequently in Altadena. And he would come alive during Christmas time. Just that was his jam. And so anyways, during Christmas time, one year, he ended up planting a pine tree in his front yard. And me and my sister, we were little, and the tree was about the same height, you know. And so every year he would deck out that tree, and we would take photographs in front of it and essentially just watching us grow with the tree. And eventually that tree outgrew us. So when I moved to this home, my father went to Oregon, and he bought another blue spruce pine tree, and he planted it with his own two hands. And so we could continue the tradition with my kids, you know. And so the thing that actually broke me when I saw my home, it was that tree. It sounds crazy, but I mourned that tree. But because my father has since passed, you know, and there's some things that you can never replace. Because some people, you know, they make that comment like, hey, you know, everything's replaceable. And you know what I mean? And you got out alive. And we are absolutely grateful and blessed for that. But there's those memories that are tied to things that you just can't get back. But you know what? I did hear something recently from a gentleman that I shared that exact same story with. He told me, Monique, he was like, you know what? That pine tree served its purpose for the time that you had it. You enjoyed it for those years that your father was here, and you got to witness your children in front of it. So I needed that perspective, honestly.
Zenobia, are you going to be able to rebuild? Do you want to rebuild there?
Oh, there was no doubt. Once I finagled my way up to see my home, got on my block and saw my block, this was at about right before noon that day. So if you know Altadena, we know how to move around past things. And so, yeah, so when I saw it, I said, my house is gone. That was all I could really say. But once I saw it, I'm like, okay, next season. And here, this will be my opportunity to now put my footprint on what had come through my husband's family for me to pass on to my kids. And again, I have women that are in their 40s. And so I didn't realize that they were mourning also because they lost their childhood home. And so they were trying to come home to be able to see it. But at the time, they wouldn't have been able to see it anyway. So for that reason, but I get to put my own, you know, this right here on the next iteration, the next rebirth. So in terms of the insurance, yes, I've tried to pay attention. So everybody pull out all those 50 million words and read the fine print. Because in the process, it turns out that that's the first go-to, even before you go to FEMA. So at the very beginning, they were saying it in reverse and wrong to begin with. So because FEMA was sending you back because the insurance is going to pay first. So in terms of it being adequate, I think I'm pretty close. I just left the adjuster this before coming here.
Right.
And, you know, going through very closely, and I have my two daughters. I have three other sets of eyes that are interpreting it. So I'm kind of blessed there. But for the most part, I see the path to be able to do that at whatever additional cost, because I do have a lot of extra things. I don't believe in cheapening out on that. So, so I think I'll be okay there.
James?
So you've been using the word make you whole. Nothing will make me whole. The loss is too deep. My wife designed most of our home. There were items in there, art, original art of hers, art of her mother's, things from my great grandparents that are somewhere in the ash. And so, yeah, we had them. But, you know, and they're in our heart. They may be in our soul. I think we're at a place in our life right now. We had 10 years of our little slice of Eden, as far as we were concerned. We didn't need to go away. It was a place for us to have a staycation if we wanted to do it. Everyone felt really loved and embraced that came into our home and were wowed by the beauty of what she and primarily she and I co-created with the grace of God. And then there's this concern about the environmental degradation and what's going to happen with all the toxic stuff, you know, our computers that were there that are melted and all this other stuff that's potentially flowing down to the ocean. And how long is that stuff going to stay? And when would we really be able to have a safe access to go back in and do this? So don't know the answers to that. And
pretty close. So rebuilding is kind of up in the air at this point.
So rebuilding is right now it's not on the table, yeah. But you know, we need to wait and really process, you know, what does it mean and where do we go?
Well, have any of you given serious thought to leaving? Some people have said already that they're out of here.
I personally,
Monique,
I personally, I was going through it where I was angry at first, you know, like, why did this happen? I can't even envision a future here because right now it truly looks like apocalyptic war zone movie scene. Like it is insane. And to envision a future, the Altadena that I grew up loving with the trees and everything, am I going to see that in my lifetime? You know, I don't know. But I've gone through it and stuff like that. And I'm like, no, I need to do this. I need to. So, yeah.
Zenobia?
Oh, I totally see it.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I totally see it. Yeah, like I said, I lost 10 orange trees, a grapefruit tree, pomegranate. And I don't know if people know, but Altadena was in the top 25 of the urban farming communities in the country. And so the buzz around me is that, oh, yeah. And so just to address the toxins, I'm this close from the EPA removing the toxins from my property. And then they'll be going down 6 inches to make sure that the soil is fine.
Yeah.
So I already have a timeline, and I kind of see that timeline happening. And then after that, then I'll go and see if there's anything, if I can find my mother's grandmother's pearls or my black vinyl records are all gone. So I know that.
I'm sorry.
That EPA will remove. But I totally see that. And so now at this point, a month away, I'm starting to kind of see what the steps are going to be. And to be fair and honest, some of this is happening and being made as we go with our administrators and with the organizations because it's different. This is a different day and time. There's different technologies to be able to process stuff. Tech Diva here. and so some of those, you want to be cautious and not underestimate because that makes people mad. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's better to say that it's more. And so pacing and patience.
You know, James, before we kind of wrap things up here, given that you are a climate activist, it's something that I wanted to just kind of get your take on. What do you say to those who do not believe that climate change exists, given what you have all collectively experienced?
I, if I wasn't a believer in that before, I am now. I think that given the scale of the fire, the scale of other, of what everyone in this room has experienced here, what we experience in other parts around the country, the flooding in North Carolina, where that was unprecedented. I mean, I think that's going to be the overused word, but we haven't defined something else to what it's like. and what does it mean? Where the idea of putting the toxic waste from the Palisades onto the beach at Will Rogers State Beach, and how much of that is going to, where is that leaching going to go? What's it going to do to the fish, to the fauna and flora around here? How long will that stay? You know, that bothers me. And I think about all the different organizations. I think about Heal the Bay, that's been monitoring the bay for however long since it was first founded, and looking at that. And, you know, what does it mean? And do people, how do we get people to believe what the scientists are saying?
Yeah. I just want to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart for joining us tonight. This has been so special to have you all here, to hear all of your stories. And thank you so much for sharing them with us.
Yeah. And again, you have been listening to, I think, a very interesting hour with six people from Pacific Palisades and Altadena, and how their lives have been just turned upside down because of these fires. And hopefully some of the comments that they've made will give you who are listening, who may have a shared experience, maybe it'll give you some hope going forward. We hope that sincerely. For Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman. Thank you for joining us.